Hello and welcome to the Declined Estate Internet Radio Stream, the show in which we get together to discuss the ups and downs of life outside the Matrix. Declined Estate is proud to bring you one of the surprisingly few netcasts in which the hosts do not support acts of aggression against you. If at any point you would like to call in and weigh in on the conversation, please contact Skype user Declined Estate with a text message, and we'll do our best to get you on the air. If you are interested, we may keep you on. That's Declined Estate, spelled out one word, no punctuation. You can find us at the web at our official website, declinefm.com, where you will find a link to the live chat. For a more leisurely but less interactive experience, plug in Declined Estate on iTunes. If there's a topic you want to hear discussed on a later show, please submit to r/declinedestate@reddit.com, and links to both our live stream and archive episodes can be found at both declinefm.com and r/declinedestate@reddit.com. I'm Ronald McPaul, your beacon of freedom in the heart of the Silicon Valley, and we have a number of fascinating topics today we think you're going to enjoy, as well as a special guest host slash interview, but we'll get to that in a sec. I'm joined by my handsome co-casters, and I will let them go around the horn and introduce themselves.
Hi guys, this is Eternal here. Welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Kwashiorkor.
And this is Zom.
Welcome, guys. Awesome. And I'm most excited to say, as I hinted earlier, that we have a special guest host on, Mr. Ian Freeman, prominent liberty activist, host of Free Talk Live, a very good show worth checking out, a member of the Free State Project that actually put his money where his mouth is, who will be talking to us from the Shire now. And welcome to the Declined Estate, Ian.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on. We were all very excited with anticipation. I think you are inspiring us to up our audio quality and hopefully the content, too.
Cool.
So, as Zom mentioned earlier, we're a community pretty much exclusively from Reddit, assembled voluntarily.
Fantastic. So how long has this been going on now? A few months?
A little more in the month, I think. I just want to make sure my mic's sounding good. I was having some audio. Okay, I'm going to restart some stuff really quickly.
Yeah, so Eternal, who was just fixing his mic, he's the Michael Bluth of our group, if you will. He kind of brought us all together. There was, you know, we were a kind of a news, you know, Reddit's a message board, a news board. And the anarcho-capitalism one in particular, I think, kind of got close, even though it's a pretty big one on Reddit, relatively. And he's kind of spontaneously posted something, and it came together pretty quick. Within, I think, 28 days, I checked how recent the post was from him first posting, "Do you guys want to do a podcast?" We were putting one together.
Cool. So where is everybody?
That's a good question. Well, as I mentioned, I'm in the heart of the Silicon Valley, which it's debatable where that is, as Rutto said in the chat. But we got people from all over the world. Go ahead, I guess, Zomer.
Yeah, I'm actually in Bradenton, Florida.
I've been there.
Yeah, so I've heard.
Is there a story there? That sounds intriguing.
No, I lived there. I lived in Sarasota, which is just to the south, so. Not really much of a story. Just been there a bunch.
Oh, that's kind of a cool connection, though.
Yeah, and Mark is actually from Bradenton as well.
That's right. My co-host on Free Talk Live. So who else? And where else?
This is Quash. I'm from, I'm in the Kalamazoo area.
Oh, okay. We're on the air in Kalamazoo.
Yeah, I think just on Saturdays. I usually listen online.
That's right.
Yeah, I just started listening when I happened to stumble across the show driving around one Saturday afternoon, you know, evening, and I'm like, oh there they are. So I would have found you guys one way or another.
Fantastic. Well, that's one of the reasons why radio is so important to what we do on Free Talk Live, is that people can just stumble into the ideas of freedom just by hitting the scan button.
Yeah, agreed. And one of the more interesting things about it is the fact that a lot of the people drawn to the Liberty Movement, at least us as a group, I guess because we're on Reddit, there's a lot of tech nerds. There's a lot of people with a lot of prowess and ability on the internet, which is kind of like the wild, wild west of now. So it kind of puts us in a good position, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. I think my mic should be better now.
Sounds better. Yeah.
When it comes to tech, of course, you know, we're still working out some of the kinks, and this is something I know we talked a little bit last night on, and something that I think that every new cast has to deal with, which is getting, you know, the ropes down with how to run things, the technical side of stuff. And of course, you know, getting a good listener base. So this is one of the things I think we all wanted to talk about to an extent, is how do we get ourselves together in some sort of to be more official in general and to be more professional sounding.
Right on. Do we want to start? I know we had some questions. We're kind of foaming at the mouth with things to talk about today. Eternal, you want to drop right into topics? Your mic sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I definitely think that one of the things we really wanted to talk about is, you know, when you are out there doing activism, Ian, and we still have you online, right? I just want to make sure.
I'm right here.
Okay, yeah, okay. So I really wanted to ask, you know, when you're out there doing activism for the Free State Project, when you're out there putting yourself basically in harm's way, getting the attention of, you know, men in blue costumes and, you know, who have weapons that can use deadly force against you, you know, mm-hmm. is that something that is especially, have you ever gotten into this position where you've been extremely frightened for, you know, your personal safety, you know, been in a situation where you think, well, you know, if this escalates badly, I could be really hurt or killed even. And, you know, how do you deal with that?
You know, it's one of the reasons why I made the move to New Hampshire, is because the police up here, at least in my area in Keene, the southwest corner of the state, they're just a little bit easier going than, say, down in South Florida. I don't have any doubt that if I were to be doing this sort of activism in other places like Phoenix or in Florida, that there'd be a good chance that the police would commence a beating on me. But up here, they're pretty, you know, I mean, in comparison, they're decent. I've never really been in fear for my life by, you know, or any kind of physical harm from these particular officers. That's not to say they couldn't do that. It's not to say that's not a possibility. It's just I've never heard of that happening. Yes, if somebody is to go limp, there's a higher chance that they're going to get hurt, you know, if they're being placed in a police car or something like that. But even in those cases, I've seen the police be more gentle than some of their counterparts might have been in other places.
And yeah, I was going to mention, you know, if those of us who don't live in the Free State Project, which I think is all of us, want to go out and do a kind of act.
I know. I feel guilty.
I do think that, you know, one thing we all want to do is get out there and do the kind of things you're doing and be active, but, you know, obviously it's not as safe. I mean, there's not the community.
No, I wouldn't do anything anywhere else. I mean, not only is it not as safe as far as the police is concerned, but you don't have the people to back you up. I mean, unless you do, which is pretty rare. I mean, there's a few different groups across the country where there's fairly decent amount of concentration of activists in places like Austin or Orlando. But ultimately, their effectiveness is negated by the fact that they're in areas in which there are a very large population. So even if you have as many people as you, let's say you have as many activists in Orlando as you do in Keene, that doesn't make much of a difference in Orlando because it's a huge place. And, you know, the population is as large as the whole population of New Hampshire. So you've got the concentration factor here and the small population factor.
Yeah, and it's nice that they already did a good amount of research as a Free State Project, which we've all been able to follow, that, hey guys, water's fine.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, I really wouldn't dare dream of doing any of this kind of activism down here in Bradenton or Sarasota. There's absolutely no support structure. The cops, they are not afraid to use violent means fairly quickly. I mean, even in the Ron Paul meetup in Sarasota, there were 7 people that showed up.
When was this?
It was January.
I probably know half of them.
One of the guys actually was the owner of RonPaulProducts.com, which is the largest private Ron Paul memorabilia website.
I don't know if I know him, but you know, it's been years since I've been in Sarasota. I left and haven't been back. You know, we've actually – the Sarasota Libertarian Party is no longer a party the last time I looked. It is now a libertarian club because they probably don't have enough members to actively, you know, qualify as being a party. And that's because a lot of the best people from down there have already made the move up here. Neil Connor from Flaming Freedom, which is a great LGBT-oriented liberty radio show. He is from Sarasota originally. Mark, obviously my co-host, from Sarasota, and the guy that lives out at his house is another guy from who was the VP of the Libertarian Party down there for a little while. So, you know, essentially the Free State Project also acts as a bit of a brain drain for other areas of the country because, you know, the best activists are going to be attracted to where the best activists are. And, you know, that's still not – by the way, I want to make it clear, that's still not saying much calling the people up here the best activists because some of them don't really know what they're doing. A lot of the people here want to do activism. They're new to the ideas of activism. And, of course, there's no better place to get your feet wet in activism than being here in New Hampshire because there are a number of experienced activists here that have been doing it for, you know, a decade or more. And there's nothing like it anywhere else. I mean, period. And of course, as time goes on, more people will come over here and get active here, and of course, will become more effective. And then it'll become undeniable that this is a place to be for freedom.
Oh, and a question came from the chat. If at all possible, would it be possible to inquire if to Ian as to the current climate momentum of the Liberty Movement in his part of New Hampshire?
Well, it never moves as fast as I want it to. I mean, if everybody that listened to my show or, you know, in the Liberty Movement, if 10% of the Liberty Movement were to pick up this year and move to New Hampshire, it'd be curtains for the state. But unfortunately, it takes a long time for these things to happen. People have their lives and their jobs and other things that slows them down. So, you know, I'm convinced that more numbers is the solution. People kind of ebb and flow in their levels of activism up here. You know, a lot of people don't have the ability that I do. I mean, I'm my own business. I run my own business, so I have the ability to set my own schedule. I don't have a boss telling me I need to be somewhere on a Monday morning. So if I need to go and record a Deimos trial on Monday, I can take the whole day off and do that. You know, your average person, if they're working at a job, can't do those sorts of things. So, you know, when I see nine people get up at 6 a.m. to come out 6:30 to Keene Activity Center to carpool out, drive an hour and a half to Manchester to get there at 8, if I see nine people show up, I'm really happy. That's pretty awesome because I know that's not going to really happen anywhere else in the country. It certainly wouldn't have happened in Sarasota. There weren't even nine people attending the Libertarian Party meetings on a weekly basis there. So, you know, we don't have enough. We don't have the numbers yet. We need more people in more places across New Hampshire, active in more of a variety of different ways. But then again, I'm always, you know, I always want more. And so I guess there's never really a true satisfaction there for me. I want more people to be here and more active in more ways. I'm particularly disappointed in the lack of coverage from places like Manchester and that sort of thing. There were some people in from Manchester visiting Keene recently, and somebody, you know, asked them, or they were talking about the activism that was going on. Like they recently did a cop block at a checkpoint. And there was some Pork 411 messages that went out about it, kind of announcing it and talking about it. But there was no blog coverage whatsoever, with the exception of me posting a video to freekeen.com. So there's a real lack of promotion from the various different areas of the state, which, you know, so again, there's a lot of areas in which the activism movement can grow here. And so if you can add your talents to that mix, then that would be great.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying about it's a numbers game, and you guys are really in an ideal spot to kind of push that in your favor, at least more than I can in California. California would be a nightmare. Absolute nightmare.
We just had a guy move from California. He created a brand new website called portcalendar.com, which is kind of bringing all the different various liberty activism calendars from across the state together into one place. So it's just neat seeing new people show up and the ideas that they bring to the table that are fresh and that, you know, nobody's done before, and thinking about, gosh, you know, we've only got 1,000 people here. And of that 1,000, I only know, you know, a couple few hundred of them. And I don't know what half of them are doing. I don't know what 90% of them are doing. So, you know, it's always neat seeing the different projects that that pop up, especially as more new people show up and add their ideas to the mix.
Yeah, I can tell you that just throwing this podcast we were talking about a second ago, that it's recent and new. This was a big jump. I think in California, you can't really be above board as somebody who likes liberty. It just doesn't make sense to anybody. So being able to verbalize these things is kind of unusual for me. I mean, it's been only on a podcast, not as much in person, things will be sniped. But I've always grown up and lived in coastal areas of Southern California, mostly living in the Bay Area now, and they're blue counties to say the least. It's all Obama, all the time, every day.
Are you familiar with the Bartholomew brothers?
I am not.
These are a couple guys who did some great activism there a year ago. They made a taxes equals theft sign, and I think they're in Yuba County. Anyway, they made this humongous sign, and they took it on an overpass and held it and kind of attached it to the fencing of the overpass. And it was not long before the sheriffs, the police showed up, threatened
them. Yeah, I
heard
about this.
Yep, and actually arrested them on some nonsense charge about wearing a mask in public and some other nonsense.
Yeah, they were wearing the V for Vendetta masks.
Right, and they ended up going to court. They spent $10,000 on an attorney, and they lost. The jury found them guilty. The jury basically said, you know, well, it's not illegal, really, what you did, but you didn't do what the cops wanted you to do, which was take your masks off immediately, and you didn't identify yourself to the police, even though you were on foot, you weren't driving. You have no obligation. You don't have any obligation to show ID to the cops, but you should have anyway, because they're the police, and they asked you to. And that was essentially the position of the jury there. It was disgusting.
Oh my God. That is disgusting.
Yeah. And, you know, there were actually some people that drove quite a ways to go to that trial, but California is a big place. It's kind of hard to, you know, easily go out and do something with other folks across the state. And by the way, the people that did drive over there have now moved to New Hampshire, and they were the guy that created the court calendar.
Probably the reason they did is because that drive made them realize that they needed to leave California.
Yeah, maybe so. And I know the Bartholomew brothers are also planning on leaving California and coming to New Hampshire as well. So again, there's that brain drain factor. I mean, you guys have some great activists out there, but they're even better when they're here.
Stack to deck.
There's more than just activism to come to New Hampshire for. I mean, it's a great state for other things too. We had one question from the IRC chat from JR who was asking, how will New Hampshire fare during, an economic collapse, basically. He thinks that there's going to be an upcoming economic collapse. And I'm inclined to agree that things are going to get way worse. So, you know, how do you think New Hampshire is going to fare? How do you think the Liberty Movement's going to affect?
Well, it's already faring pretty decent in comparison to other states. The regulatory burden here is lower than in a lot of other places. The number of bureaucrats per population is the lowest of all the 50 states. The government is fairly small in comparison to other governments elsewhere. I mean, again, we still have our share of problems and issues here. There's some big ones. But overall, economically, New Hampshire is very strong. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that sort of thing, especially with, innovators like, the Bitcoin folks. A lot of them are based here. And in fact, it's interesting. If you look at the internet map came out recently, I'm sure some of you probably seen it. Where there's like a visualization of little spheres that are all.
Yeah, I saw that. It was really cool.
Yeah. If you look up freestateproject.org and then zoom out a little bit, everything like nearby is Bitcoin related, which I just thought was interesting. There's, a lot of that going on up here. And I think that'll probably pan out into something someday for, local currencies. And of course, the ideas of secession are relatively accepted, certainly within the Liberty Movement. I can't really speak for the rest of New Hampshire, but hopefully we'll start to see more talk about that. And of course, the more we can disconnect from the federal government, the better. And the more political success that Free State Project participants have and other New Hampshire natives who love liberty, the more political success, the more likely we'll be able to do more nullification things with the federal government. And again, set ourselves up for being in a better place economically here.
So from what I understand from what you're saying and talking about political movements and stuff like that and how you can get active, you're not talking about formally going through trying to get people elected or just on all fronts?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so you're talking about that, but also specifically the legislative branch. I think we mentioned it on the podcast last week because we were pretty enamored by it, but the Derek J thing was beautiful.
Sure.
If anything kind of jumped me or emboldened me to go towards that direction that you're talking about, going to the Free State, it was probably that. That was really cool.
Well, that's great. I'm glad to hear about that. But it's unrealistic to expect most people to do what Derek J or myself or other activists have done by, taking risks with civil disobedience.
Yeah.
Most people.
And the thing that you were on for at one point that you were asked, I think you took no credit for hiring on because you said you were in jail. That makes it such a cool story. If that was you,
yeah,
in jail.
Derek J's outstanding. He's great, and yeah, we've had some amazing civil disobedience up here, and I, you know, it's what attracted me to New Hampshire, and my civil disobedience attracted other people to New Hampshire, and now Derek's is attracting other people here. So I think that the kind of person that civil disobedience attracts is an important type of activist to have up here. But at the same time, you know, the men running the jails aren't going to stop jailing the people that the men in the robes tell them to jail until the laws can change. And so I think political action is as important as any other form of activism. So I involve myself in whatever I can.
I can get behind that.
Ian, I've been following for about a year. You know, I followed the whole time you were in the cage and then Derek J. And I think you had mentioned reading some kind of spiritual material while you were in there. And I'm wondering how it changed your attitudes about the Free State Project. Was there anything that changed you where you said, I've got to rethink how I'm doing this, whether it's the approach or,
No, I was already, you know, getting into a sort of new age spirituality prior to going to the jail. So there was nothing that nothing new there. It was just more reading about different religions and things like that in jail. So, no, it didn't really have any effect on my thoughts of the Free State Project. I still support civil disobedience, and I still, you know, refuse to do what I'm told. Some thug at the Manchester Superior Court the other day, a couple weeks ago, when we went to go and see Adamo's pretrial hearing, had threatened me with jail if I didn't do what he told me to do, which was to stay out of the clerk of courts. He only wanted Kate, Adamo's girlfriend, to go in there, and I basically told him, well, I'm going to go into that office anyway, and, you know.
Yeah, you guys just state everything what you do calmly, and I, with Derek J. And yourself, I'm just so impressed at you. You're so logical to the very end. Like, he was kind of helping them connect the dots. He was saying, like, you want to waste the taxpayers' money on that? Like the such far extended implications of things. It was impressive.
Well, you know, practice makes perfect. I mean, I was pretty angry when I moved up here because, you know, government, well, they do a lot of horrible things to peaceful people, as you well know. And it's easy to get angry about the stuff that they do. But it that kind of washed away after a while, after, you know, being around so many positive, liberty-minded people here and getting to kind of know the government bureaucrats as well and not seeing them as faceless automatons that don't have feelings of their own, but seeing them as human beings who,
right,
you know, like the rest of us, are flawed and can change.
No way. And they're flawed?
Yeah. So it's just been kind of a process. And so if I find myself getting angry, I try to just kind of shift away from those feelings and try to be more positive. We've got a really good thing going on here, and it just, you know, it does keep getting better over time as more people get here. Even though, you know, when you look at the, I guess, the more granular events, they can be outrageous. You know, Derek J. getting pepper sprayed, getting taken off a bike and attacked. I mean, there are some absolutely outraging, you know, anger-inducing things here. But ultimately, you know, if you stay calm and focus on love rather than hate, then I think everything will end up working out. Or, you know, they'll kill us all and, you know, drop a nuke on New Hampshire, and in which case, that's fine. At least I had fun before they did that.
That's great.
I will finance it personally.
You mean the nuking of New Hampshire?
Well, with my tax dollars.
Yeah, I think we all will.
Stop paying
Sorry.
Those.
I really should.
Yeah. Federal withholding. Can't do anything about it.
Oh, there's got to be something you can do. Can't you file like a zero withhold or something like that?
You can file exempt.
No, not for me. I don't think I can.
No, everyone can file exempt. It's up to the IRS to come after you after the fact.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
I haven't paid in about 2 years.
Excellent.
All right. I've officially been called out twice for very good reasons, paying my withholding and not going to New Hampshire.
Yes, everyone should move to New Hampshire, stop paying the federal government, and let's all secede personally from the state. We can all just drive around with no license plates, and can you imagine? I mean, if we had enough people to do these things, they wouldn't be able to stop us. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, and, you know, just because, you know, we're out there, you know, people like you driving out around without license plates, and you're
actually, to be clear, I didn't mean to say that. I actually had a plate on. It was a private plate that I had manufactured at a neat little website called licenseplates.tv, where they make custom plates for people, and you can get a plate looking like any country or any state or anything that you want. So I got one in a yellow and black scheme, so yellow with black numbers, and it said at the top, it said private. 603-, and then my phone number as the big numbers, as the seven digits. And then below that, it said the Shire. So it was actually a better plate than the state issues, because you could call me. So like, if I was being a bad driver, you could actually call me if you wanted to.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I like that. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Certainly, I was going to mention, isn't it like a Steve Jobs who only drove cars with dealer plates?
I heard about that.
Just rotate cars?
I guess he got around it by just always leasing, and it was like, it's like 6 months or, I mean, he was in Cupertino, like, which is right next to me, and I think that's the rule here.
Yeah, there's a rule that you can drive without a license plate at all, not even with a dealer plate, for the first 6 months. So he had a deal with the dealership that he'd get a recurring lease every 6 months just to handle that.
Yeah. So I know one more thing we wanted to ask was, you know, when it comes to being in New Hampshire in general, I know that in a liberty movement, agorism is a big thing that's been going on. And we had a question from Trixie in the chat. How is the state of sustainable agriculture in New Hampshire? How is agorism, you know, flourishing in New Hampshire in general?
Good question. If Mark were here, he could probably tell you a lot more about that. But I know that he orders food, a lot of it, from local farmers. And there's a network of people that kind of facilitates that. So there's a Free State Project participant named Dawn Lincoln who kind of takes orders from folks. And then she'll come around and actually deliver, you know, fresh meat and you know, various different veggies and things like that. So yeah, that's, as I understand it, it's pretty popular. I go to the grocery store, so it's not really my thing, but that does exist here, and it's relatively popular. So yes.
Yeah, I know you guys have Bardo Farms, which is like an agorist farm, agorist farm, right?
Honestly, I've been to Bardo for Bardo Fest, and I know it is a farm, but I don't know anything about what they do there. I think they, you know, have some pigs and do some gardening or whatever, but honestly, I have no real clue. So there are various different farms though around that, whether they are Free Stater operated or liberty oriented or not, are absolutely interested in selling people their products locally. And there's a big, you know, buy local movement here in Keene. Some of the local stores have little stickers out in the front that say it's Keene to buy locally. And so, you know, obviously that's kind of a big thing. There's a farmer's market here twice a week, you know, regularly in Keene. So there's a relatively popular natural/farm-based eating movement here.
Oh, and do you have any tips or tricks for us as a new radio show to either gain listeners or just in general?
Well, that's a good question. Boy, you know, I've been doing this for so long, it's just kind of second nature. But I started on the radio, so I don't really actually have any ideas, you know, right out of the box that you know, can help with somebody just starting with a internet radio program. I would say that social networking, you know, that wasn't around when I started Free Talk Live is today, and obviously that helps. So, you know, you guys are already on Reddit and clearly Facebook, Twitter. These are obvious tools. So if you have listeners and you have a good show, inevitably they will tell people, and that's the most effective way to spread the word is by word of mouth. So just keep putting a consistent product out. I think that's probably the most important thing is consistency, because, you know, folks will start their own internet radio show and it's a hobby and, you know, it's fun for a little while, and then they decide that something else is more fun, like some other hobby that they're interested in, and so they'll quit the radio show. And maybe, you know, maybe they're quitting because they didn't get the listenership they expected, or they're just bored, or who knows what. But if you don't keep the product coming on a consistent basis, and a basis that the listeners can expect, you know, so whether it's once a week or every night or whatever, a couple times a week, that's what's really important, is that you can be there for the listeners when they expect you to.
Yeah, the good thing about us is that we have about 9 or 10 hosts that we cycle through. So even if some get bored, they can take a few weeks off. Someone else can fill in. And we're on twice a week. Wednesday night, of course, is our call-in show. And on Sunday afternoons, we have just like a philosophical talk with no calls.
Cool. I am, by the way, going to tweet out that I am on live with you guys here right now. So maybe that'll share.
Awesome.
Much appreciated. Listeners. Yes.
We got a break coming up here at just a little bit here. So are you going to stick around past the break?
Yeah, if you want me to stick, I can stick for a little bit, sure.
Yeah, join us for some topics. All posted to Reddit.
And are we going to go to break now?
Hold on one second, guys. Actually, yeah, continue on for a bit. I'm just going to have to check some audio stuff really quick.
So, Eternals, I would imagine, is working on it. We just got the ability to pump music. So as you start a new show, it seems like things start coming together piecemeal. You know, at first we're, you know, on Skype, we realize, like you mentioned last night, that the Mumble is just like an amazing, you know, free center. And then piecemeal, people getting mics, people getting new amps, and it's just been a pretty steep learning curve, which is kind of awkward to do while you're actually streaming, but it's been fun.
Well, at least audio doesn't cost a whole lot, as far as, you know, you can spend $1,000 and get some pretty nice equipment that's going to last a long time. But you can always come in at a couple hundred and you know, be passable. So it's not a big investment, which is one of the nice things about this business.
Well, we are decentralized, so it is a cost for each and every one of us instead of just a join cost. But it's good that we're decentralized. We have people from all around the world. We do have one or two people from Australia. One of our main hosts is from Ecuador, moved up to Northern California, and then we have people across the U.S.
We got some Australians too.
Yeah. So, you know, we're going to head to break in a bit here. Hope you guys can stick around for after the break. We'll be right back. This is Decline to...
Look at this lead pencil. There's not a single person in the world who could make this pencil. Remarkable statement? Not at all. The wood from which it's made, for all I know, comes from a tree that was cut down in the state of Washington. To cut down that tree, it took a saw. To make the saw, it took steel. To make the steel, it took iron ore. This black center, we call it lead, but it's really graphite, compressed graphite. I'm not sure where it comes from, but I think it comes from some mines in South America. This red top up here, the eraser, bit of rubber, probably comes from Malaya, where the rubber tree isn't even native. It was imported from South America by some businessmen with the help of the British government. This brass ferrule, I haven't the slightest idea where it came from, or the yellow paint, or the paint that made the black lines, or the glue that holds it together. Literally thousands of people cooperated to make this pencil. People who don't speak the same language, who practice different religions, who might hate one another if they ever met. When you go down to the store and buy this pencil, you are in effect trading a few minutes of your time for a few seconds of the time of all those thousands of people. What brought them together and induced them to cooperate to make this pencil? There was no commissar sending out orders from some central office. It was a magic of the price system, the impersonal operation of prices that brought them together and got them to cooperate to make this pencil so that you could have it for a trifling sum. That is why the operation of the free market is so essential, not only to promote productive efficiency, but even more, to foster harmony and peace among the peoples of the world.
Welcome back to Decline to State. That, of course, was Milton Friedman talking about the inherently and most complex nature of our most basic things. We're on with Ian Freeman of Free Talk Live, and I think that kind of relates to what you were talking about earlier about how with farms or things locally, they don't necessarily have to be people running them that are part of the Liberty Movement. You don't have to be people you like or even speak the same language with, but as long as you're interacting non-violently and peacefully, it's a pretty easy sell, at least at that level.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, from what I found, that the more liberty-minded people interact with folks on a, you know, whether it's a business basis or some other basis here, you know, community kind of activism, helping the community, that sort of thing. The more interactive we can get outside of our own movement, the better that is for the ideas of freedom. So I was, you know, I'm just an activist through and through. So when Occupy came around last year and I got out of jail, I was reading about it in jail, got out of jail. It was one of the first things I did when I got out was got involved in Occupy and kind of helped kick off Occupy Keene and really helped them out in a lot of different ways. And I showed up with the intention of listening. You know, I didn't want to show up. Like, obviously, I talk for a living. I'm pretty good at talking. But when you're not in a talk show environment, you're in with real people in a real life situation, it's important to listen to them. And so that's what I did with Occupy. And I listened to a lot of different folks and, you know, what their concerns were about, you know, what they thought was wrong with the country and what they wanted to change. And over time, I ended up getting to the point where I was being asked, well, you know, Ian, what do you think? And that was, of course, a great opportunity to, you know, talk about how freedom is the solution. But had I come in and started just puking freedom all over people, that really would have turned them off.
I probably would have been okay with it. Just kidding.
And it wouldn't have worked out really, really well. So what's ended up happening here is a lot of the more lefty kind of folks that have been involved in Occupy have really had their eyes open to the Free State Project, because there's a lot of myths that kind of fly around about so-called free staters up here. You know, it's almost a negative term in some people's minds. And once they meet a Free Stater, and usually they'll meet them in the process of doing something they would normally do, you know, going to some kind of a club or, you know, the local community group or whatever, and they'll find out later on, oh, this person's a Free Stater, and well, maybe they aren't quite as bad as I thought that they were. And people change their minds. And that's why, again, that concentration is important, because, you know, where I came from, I was one of the few only liberty oriented people that I knew. And so therefore, people in the community weren't coming in contact with liberty oriented people very often. And so weren't coming in contact with the ideas, therefore, and just, you know, don't even have a chance to analyze them or consider them seriously. Because who's going to take a person seriously if they're the only person they've ever heard saying the things that they're saying? Whereas if you're in a movement full of people that is saying those things and, you know, talking similarly and persuasively and across a variety of, you know, strata, whether it's at work with coworkers, on the radio with various different radio programs or pirate radio stations, also television shows, you know, hitting people with the liberty message in a variety of different venues is really important. And we can do that here because of the concentration that is only growing.
Yeah, one of the things I've noticed, like, is a good test of, you know, are we on the right track is, you know, I've talked to people who, you know, I find out that maybe they're libertarian leaning or they're interested in ideas of liberty, and they've come up with the same ideas that we espouse independently. And I know I've done that a couple of times. I've had friends who have done that. And it's just something that, like, if you think through things, you know, you'll come to these conclusions, you know, eventually if you
True.
Approach it correctly and logically, which is great, because, you know, you don't have to push your ideas on other people. You just have to give them the tools and, you know, the line of the direction of things, and just let them go. And they can often, you know, if you get them interested, they'll come back with ideas and like, oh man, maybe this will work. What if we had people, you know, tell the government, you know, where exactly they want to have their money spent, and like, well, what if they don't want to spend, you know, all their money? What if they don't want some money spent at all? Like, oh, I'm
sure. And that's why asking questions is so powerful, because you can get people to, you know, think their own answers up and ask their own questions and come to their own conclusions. But it doesn't hurt.
I'm not sure
have
the people you asking questions are thinking about them too much, but they are brilliant questions, it seems.
But, well, it doesn't hurt to have, you know, things for them to encounter randomly, you know, not necessarily pushing things on people, but it doesn't hurt to have, you know, say a radio station on the air in the area that is constantly promoting the ideas of liberty 24 hours a day. So that way random people who don't know you are also coming in contact with the ideas and can assess them.
Yeah, I have a little bit something on Occupy New Hampshire. I have I met somebody who 2 or 3 weeks ago actually moved down from Manchester down to Bradenton, which is kind of funny because I'm trying to get up to New Hampshire as soon as possible. But he was active in the Occupy movement, and he said there was a big rift being drawn between Occupy and the Free State Project, because the Free Staters were very adamant about open carrying at all times, which I can understand. That's, you know, they're right. But Occupy
only some Free Staters. Not,
yeah, I heard it was 4 or 5 people that were doing it at the Occupy. But Occupy was strictly not violent, so they excommunicated those people from the group, which seems to me antithesis of everything that Occupy represents.
Yeah, it didn't really work out like that. You know, the way you make it sound is not exactly accurate in that what happened really was it was a small group of occupiers that were absolutely intolerant towards those who were open carrying, and they essentially ostracized themselves from the larger group, which, you know, the much larger group was the group that stayed together. So what they ended up doing was, as you pointed out, showing how ridiculous they are and how they're willing to, you know, they're definitely not the 99% because they, you know, have want to cut out part of the 99%.
I understand they started bringing fake toy guns after that.
I don't know anything about that part.
Just
but,
to poke fun at them.
I see. Well, as I understand it, what happened was there was one meeting where the schism happened. Approximately eight people led by someone who is alleged to be an undercover FBI agent led them to kind of their own little corner of the field where people were meeting. The much larger group was the group of the Free Staters and the remainder of the sort of the more lefty occupiers. And basically what happened was the folks who were also part of Occupy but were not Free Staters were endeared ever further to the Free Staters after watching their you know, their associates and you know, maybe their friends behave in such ridiculous ways. So what happened a week later was there was another solidarity meeting that was called where there were probably about 40 people in attendance, and I don't know, I maybe recognized a third of them, but the rest of them I didn't know. And so people have come together even more so with the absence of these absolute just arch socialist types that, you know, couldn't tolerate people carrying guns around. So yeah, if anything, it's been a good thing.
One of these people actually that split off is a girl who likes to troll the anarcho-capitalist board on Reddit. Her name is Julia.
Julia Pitt.
That is her. That is correct. Yeah. I understand that she likes to raid Free State Project events such as the Liberty Forum and drop off socialist propaganda and then leave.
Yeah, it sounds like something she would do. She definitely is a frequent commenter over at freekeen.com.
Yeah, you know, I've been following the whole Occupy thing, you know, especially in the thick of it. It was fun watching all the videos, but I think a lot of them have really learned they've got to watch out for the infiltrators, the provocateurs. They've got to be really afraid of people who are pretending to be, you know, leaders in their movement. And, you know, so it's good when you say, oh, I was just there. You start off asking questions. You know, I remember how, you know, Jesse Ventura showed up with cameras, you know, and said, I think that was in Oakland, and he said, well, you guys have been leaderless. I'll be your leader, you know, sacrificing himself into publicity there. And they basically all turned their back on him, you know.
Yeah. There was one lady who showed up. I remember the very first Occupy Keene meeting. This lady showed up. She claimed to be from the New York Times, and she was probably, you know, in her early 60s, maybe late 50s. And she said she's been doing this since the 60s. She's been organizing since the 60s. And we all need to listen to her and do what she says to do. And this was a group of people, you know, mostly New Hampshire people that had come out for their interest, mutual interest in Occupy. Nobody really knew each other at this point. And there was an immediate rejection of this woman, like right out the gate. She did not get any traction whatsoever. And people were really creeped out by her. And she never came back.
That's interesting. Actually, Sovereign Curtis was the one who told me about her and what she really likes to do. Because he posts occasionally on Ucker Capitalist board.
I don't know who Sovereign Curtis is.
He's just a member in the Free State Project. Sovereign Curtis, I think, organized
three people who was actually ostracized from Porkfest this year, the Porcupine Freedom Festival. He was banned from the event.
I understand that he organized the first roast and then tried to claim ownership over it. Is that correct?
As I understand it, that's right.
Yeah, that's always a pity when you have that kind of infighting stuff. That's something I've not really encountered too much infighting in my days in working with liberty activism. The little bit
really?
That I've done.
You must not have worked with very many of them.
No, not too much. Only about a year and a half now. I worked when I was in school. I co-founded the Libertarian Club over there, and you know, it's definitely something where it's easy to get in arguments, and I think it's important to always have that kind of cohesion that we're all on the same team here. We're all trying to move towards a voluntary society. Can we, you know, not worry about squabbling over stuff? And
well, the petty, it's been my observation that the petty disagreements are going to happen, and people are, you know, they're human, they don't all get along, and the fact is the larger a movement gets, the more likely petty drama will become a part of it. it's just inevitable, it seems. And it's one of the bigger complaints that people will make about, you know, if they're paying attention to the Liberty Movement up here in New Hampshire, if they're paying close attention, they'll hear about things like the Curtis thing and very, you know, a few other situations that have sprouted up over the years. And they'll say, well, I don't want to move to New Hampshire because you guys have too much drama up there. And the thing is, they don't know what it's like to have a movement where you have, you know, a bunch of people involved. Good luck growing your movement wherever you are to anyone thinking that way. Good luck growing your movement to the size that we have grown this one and avoiding any instances of drama blowing up on Facebook or whatever. And usually all the drama is usually based online. When people meet in real life, they behave differently. So for the most part, most of the drama is completely overblown and out of proportion, or seen out of proportion than what it really, you know, how important or unimportant it really is. So it's just part of having a large and growing and healthy movement is that ultimately not everybody's going to be able to get along. And that's okay. We don't all have to still work towards more freedom. If you don't get along with somebody, just don't hang out with them. Don't spend time with them. Focus on your own activism, and the people that are like you will be attracted to it. So like you guys were saying, you know, the Derek J thing was very attractive to one of you at least. And
that was me, yeah. So, Ronald McPaul.
So yeah, so different people are attracted to different things. So, you know, some people might be really attracted to the fact that the Free State Project has a dozen or more Free State Project participants elected as state representatives. And for some people, that really gets their engines going, because, like, you know, the Libertarian Party hasn't achieved anything like that in 40 years. And we've achieved it in, you know, less than a decade here.
Yeah, I commonly see this referred to as the Big Tent problem. And it has a lot to do with Free Keene as well, right? I know there's a lot of people involved in the Free State Project, or even locals, that have a little bit of problems with Free Keene, and I guess you can call it antics.
Yeah, well, Free Keene is a website that's a multi-user blog that has people of different opinions on it. And so whenever somebody accuses Free Keene of doing anything, I always point out to them, well, whoa, there are different people here, and they don't all agree. So that's one of the points that I wanted to, you know, stress with Free Keene, is to have different people doing different activism talking about all that there. So we've got, you know, people like Daryl Perry who are, you know, focused on some political action. Myself, I'm also running for a political office up here as well. And you've still got, you know, Derek J and other folks that are more focused on civil disobedience or agorism, working underground and things like that.
What are you running for this time around? I know you were running for the school board, right?
Yep, I'm in a state rep race. This time I'm running as a Libertarian on the ticket against some Democrats. There's actually no Republican in the race, so it's two Democrats versus me for two seats. And I'll probably lose, but, you know, at least I'll get interviewed on the radio and, you know, get a newspaper a piece talking about the ideas of freedom, which is all what it's all about for me, is just spreading the ideas.
I think that's something that, you know, a lot of us have come to the conclusion on, is that politics, especially, you know, when you move up, you know, to the higher level politics in the state and national scene, liberty is probably not going to win right now. I mean, it's not going to happen.
Unless you're in New Hampshire.
Maybe if you're in New Hampshire, maybe, but...
No, you know, absolutely. I mean, as I said, we've got 12 Free State Project participants who've been elected to the state representative seats, so...
Oh, it's 12 now. That's really fantastic.
Well, actually, it's over 12 from what I understand, and that doesn't include all the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance endorsed candidates who might be New Hampshire natives or just liberty-friendly folks. And of course, the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance, they rate all of the state reps on an A through F scale about how liberty oriented their votes were. One of the state senators, Jim Forsyth, is an active listener and supporter of Free Talk Live. So, you know, how many state senators in your state are Free Talk Live listeners?
My state senators suck. I'm from Virginia. They're terrible. Yeah. Virginia is not the best state when it comes to liberty. Not the worst, but not the best.
The Free Staters have almost all but taken over the internal party mechanisms of the Republican Party. And some are involved in the Democrat Party. And so, again, numbers matter. Whether we're talking about civil disobedience to overwhelm the numbers of the police, or the political scene to overwhelm the political activists within the Republican and Democrat Party, I mean, the R's and the D's ultimately are pretty weak, you know, if you've got the numbers to take them on. And we're starting to get to that point here.
That's awesome. You know, something, you know, I've noticed is, you know, with the Ron Paul movement kind of having, you know, crescendoed, and now it's, you know, its peak, and we're on the waning. And there's a lot of people out there who are really excited for Ron Paul. There are a lot of people who are really excited to see Liberty popular and getting press and everything. And now they're a little aimless.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people are like, well, who do we turn to now? And they're looking towards, you know,
a new leader.
Politics. Yeah, they're looking for national leaders. They're looking for people to put their, you know, support behind. And I think it's important that we all, I mean, this is why I created the show in the first place, which is I wanted to reach people like that and tell them, hey, you know, it's not just about the stuff that's going on at the national level. Look local, look at your state politics, get out there and spread the message on your own. You can do things on your own. You don't need to be led. I mean, you're an individual who can express the ideas of liberty and go out there and do stuff.
Sure. Well, but, you know, people, you're right, and people should be encouraged to do those things, but you can't blame them for you know, being in that position. We're taught when we're growing up that politics is the answer, and then, you know, if you get into politics, you end up toiling for years in a system that is completely, it's soul-sucking, it's so difficult. I mean, if anybody here has been working within, you know, party politics, you know how bad it is and how frustrating it can be. And so, you know, eventually you just end up getting burned out. And that's what you're saying. A lot of these people are aimless. They don't know what to do. They don't know what the next solution is. And they're looking for someone else to come along and they can get behind and wave some signs and chant. I mean, as though, going out and, you know, doing what most people do to support political candidates is really ultimately going to change how people think. I don't think that's necessarily the case, but it's an easy way to consider yourself an activist. Oh, I gave money to the Ron Paul campaign. Well, now you're an activist. Congratulations. But no, there's a lot more that needs to be done. And some of the things that you brought up are very good ideas. And of course, obviously joining the Free State Project and moving to New Hampshire is a great first step. And like I said earlier, a lot of people that come here have never done activism before and they're excited about it. They want to get involved and there's no shortage of it here. There, in a lot of cases, there are multiple things to do on the same day and you'll have to choose what it is that is most important to you.
I gave to the campaign. Can I go back to watching the Olympics now?
Yeah.
That's a Bizarro Quash. It's one of our favorite show accents.
Oh, I understand that medical marijuana actually lost in your state. It passed in the state house and failed in the state senate by one vote. Is that correct?
No, it actually passed both and failed at the governor's desk.
And he is not seeking re-election, right?
That's correct, but that doesn't mean the guys who are any better.
I thought one of them, I think it's the Democrat, one of his platforms is that he's pro-medical marijuana, right?
That'd be nice. Honestly, I haven't paid any attention to the governor's race, so I could not answer that question.
Well, we can hope, I guess.
You could also say that he's pro-marijuana and then, you know, pull an Obama and then increase drug raids or something like that. So, you know, politicians are politicians, and you can only take their word for so much, you know, which basically zero.
Yeah, totally. We still have a ways to go as far as political success is concerned, but there are some early successes that are really worth pointing to. You know, the knife ban has been completely repealed, so you can even carry a switchblade in New Hampshire completely legally. They actually reduced the state budget by 12%, which, you know, no other state is reducing their state budgets. So, you know, there's some real wins, and a lot of them, you know, were kind of spurned on by the Free State Project participants and the friends of the Free State Project, like the grievance panel, which is a brand new thing up here in New Hampshire, and no other state has that either. So there's really some neat things that are happening, but of course it's politics and it's all very slow and frustrating.
Oh, and there's a question from the chat about the success of the Free State Project. I understand that you have over 12,000 signers now and
that's right.
A little over 1,000 movers. I don't know if you have any...
Technically not 1,000. I'll let you to the rest of the question, but to clarify, the number of the over 1,000 is not actual movers. Those are Free State Project participants in New Hampshire. So when New Hampshire was chosen, there were already a couple hundred people living in New Hampshire. And so the actual number of movers is probably closer to 800. But
okay.
You know, just to make sure we're clear on that. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just wanting to gauge your opinion maybe of how long you think till we've reached that 20,000 gold, so push it over the edge to trigger the move.
Well, I would really encourage people to not wait for 20,000 because, you know, the movers or the signers still tend to kind of come in fairly slow. I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take. For all we know, there's going to be a huge boost in a couple of years based on whatever things happen in the real world or in you know, kind of the news world. different things motivate people to sign up for different reasons. But when you go to freestateproject.org and you sign up, you can sign up with different triggers. The original idea was that getting to 20,000 and then moving would be the way to go, but it seems like that was probably not the right solution. Rather, instead to move people sooner rather than later, have them get active and encourage other people to move. So when you sign up, you can say, well, I'm going to move as soon as possible, or I'm going to move when 2,000 people are in the state, or I'm going to move. You can put whatever provision that you want on your signature. Effective way is to wait until 20,000 and then move. What the hell are you waiting for? There's so much happening now.
My personal trigger is Porkfest 2013. So, and I did that about 2 years ago.
Oh, great! Well, when you say that, you mean that's when you want to move is by that date?
Yeah, at the absolute latest. I've had a little bit of problems gathering funds. It's not quite as easy to do as I would originally have thought. It's a little harder to get a couple grand up to be stable when I move.
Yeah, it's a testament to how stuck people feel in the different places that they live. I mean, they're living so, on such a thin margin, it's difficult to get savings together and do something like that and make a big move. So thanks for putting the effort in.
Yeah, I'm down here in Bradenton. I'm sure you know how the economy was before you moved, and it has not improved. It's gone downhill quite a bit.
It was actually just beginning to tank when I, kind of headed out. So I didn't really get to see the brunt of all that. I left in 2006.
Yeah, I live right off of US 41. I'm sure you know the farther away from 41 you get, the better it gets. So really everything's closed in the area. Strip malls are barren and empty. It's pretty bad.
Incredible.
Ron, you had a question?
Oh, I was going to... Ron, you want to go?
I was just going to say a quick question. It's kind of a whiny thing, but being someone from Southern California, I've been very much spoiled, and I don't know what the Florida weather you experienced was like, probably pretty humid, but a lot of very nice weather and a lot of pretty girls, and it's liberty is important, but that's a hard trade-off. what would you say to somebody who just kind of spoiled by a cushy existence that in that regard, but with ridiculous high taxes and slow roads?
May your chains rest lightly upon you, brother.
Fair enough.
You know, I mean, there are women everywhere. There are college towns here in New Hampshire. I live in one, Keene, where the majority of people in the town are women. So, you know, yeah, okay. During the wintertime, you're not going to see too many short shorts on the women, you know, in the middle of winter. But you'd be surprised how quickly the clothes come off when the temperature comes up. I mean, if it's, you know, these people are hardcore Granite Staters, so a lot of them, or at least a lot of the people that are going to college up here, probably from New England. And, you know, if it's 40 degrees out, you'll start seeing people taking, you know, there's people walking around in their shorts. I've seen them in 32 degree weather, but, certainly when it's 40s, 50s, you'll start seeing people wear shorts, which is crazy to me, but you know, it's certainly nice to see.
Okay. That definitely helps. And I do love short shorts, so that visual is much, much appreciated.
Yes. So, and, you know, and of course their contrast is nice too, which, you know, being in Florida, it's basically summer all year except for a little bit of the wintertime. And, you know, having seasons really cool and it's different. I get cold really easily. So, the whole it's cold excuse was my excuse. For the longest time, it took probably a good year to really come to the conclusion that, well, you know, if I want to have a chance at being free, this is the best idea I've ever heard. And if people are moving there who are active like me, then those are the people I want to be around. And I'm willing to go through being cold in order to do that. I have adjusted somewhat to it. I am better at handling it now than before. But, you know, I still get cold hands, cold feet. I'm a skinny dude, so I don't have much insulation on me. It's really easy for me to get cold. But damn, I'm having the best time of my life. I have some of the most liberty-oriented friends and network of people that I know up here. And the seasons are really cool. Like, spring and fall are the two most beautiful times of the year. And even, you know, winter has its own beauty as well. But, you know, if you've never been through a fall in New England, it's something pretty spectacular. And I think that spring is a close second. You know, actually, when you go through the darkness of winter, and it is dark quite a bit, you go through the darkness of winter up here, and then spring comes out. the color is like nothing, you know, you've ever seen. I mean, yeah, sure, you've seen these bushes before last year, but it's always so pretty, you know, when they first start sprouting pink and white and yellow and orange and purple flowers all over the city of Keene. So it's so much fun to watch that happen every year.
Yeah, I'll take a frosty New Hampshire winter over Florida August any day.
Well, it gets hot up here, man. I mean, it's been in the 90s up here in the recent weeks during the daytime. So during the summer, you'll feel like Florida. It rains a lot and it's hot. So you'll get a little taste of that. And actually up here, a lot of the houses are so old, they don't have central AC. So in a lot of the rental places in town, if you want AC, you better buy a window unit because otherwise you're going to be sweating it out.
Well, yeah, fair enough. Weather tips help, and I hope that you've encountered us as being warm on the show. Yeah. And we'd love to have you on again. I would never, not discourage you. We're going to go into a little bit of a break, and wouldn't discourage you to staying around. But if you're not, I want to make sure that I give you huge, huge thanks. And also, I think I speak for the group. It's been a really, really fun conversation, and I want to let our Reddit listeners know that check out Ian on Free Talk Live, and also to move to New Hampshire immediately.
Please, so. Yeah, don't delay. I mean, if you can afford it, get up here. Obviously, having some savings is really important so you can take care of yourself, because people don't really like to take care of people that can't take care of themselves. But, make sure you get some savings in line. But if you're looking for work, if you're really seriously looking for work, you'll be able to find it. There's a lot of work available in New Hampshire if you're willing to take whatever it is that's out there. The activist community is, there's nothing else like it. There's so many exciting things happening. And of course, we can only scratch the surface of it over at freekeene.com. But, one good example is just recently Liberty Radio Network has been put on the air in Keene, and it's been on the air in Manchester before. And so we actually have, community radio, pirate radio stations airing the ideas of liberty 24/7. And so what I want to invite you guys to do is, once your show's been on the air for 6 months, hit me up and I'll give it another listen. And obviously it sounds good, like you guys are pretty principled dudes. Though you could use, maybe, do you have any ladies on this show ever?
We do. We were gonna have one on today, but she wasn't feeling that great. It's gotcha. Unfortunate. We're trying to get some more on. It's how hard it is.
It is the anyways. Sausage fest in the Liberty Movement, but we're seeing that change here too, where there are times in Keene where I'm around the activist community, and I'll be in a room with the majority women, which is a really cool thing to experience. Having been involved in the Libertarian Party down south, and women are about one out of every 10. Activists, if that, if not one out of 20. So we've got much better ratios up here, which I think is fantastic. But anyway, I wanted to invite you to submit the show for consideration for LRN.FM, and maybe we could get it into the podcast loop or something like that down the line.
Oh, that would be absolutely fantastic. And to our listeners, this is Decline to Stay. We're going to head into a short break. See you guys in a bit.
Lots of people would like to learn real U.S. history, or Western civilization, or Austrian economics. But where do you start? How do you know what sources are reliable? And how do you make the most out of your limited time? That's where my Liberty Classroom comes in. I've teamed up with a few other professors to teach you the real thing in the comfort of your own home. You can watch the courses on video. You can listen to them in your car. You can participate in discussions with others and ask us questions on our discussion boards. I get kind emails all the time from people congratulating me on my takedown of Professor So-and-so. But here, I'm going to give you the tools you need to be able to take down Professor So-and-so yourself. So who's the Liberty Classroom for? Well, pretty much anybody who suspects that maybe he didn't get quite the whole story when he learned U.S. history. Or students who aren't entirely convinced by everything their professors are telling them, or homeschoolers, or just regular Americans who want to learn the truth and not propaganda for a change. It's for people who are tired of losing debates and would like to start winning them. We'll be adding new courses all the time. Join us and get automatic access to everything we have to offer. You will not believe what we're offering you. You're not going to get this in any university in the country. This is the most important contribution I can make to our cause. This can help maximize your learning, minimize the time invested, and build up a sharp and smart cadre of Liberty folks who can really take these ideas and get them out there. Let's do this. Come on over and pay me a visit at libertyclassroom.com.
All right, guys, we are back. This is Decline to State, and that was Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live we were talking to before the break, and you just heard an advertisement from Tom Woods, who is, you know, the chair of the Ron Paul Super PAC for the 2012 election, and a fantastic historian, great guy, and he was talking about his Liberty Classroom, which is an absolutely fantastic resource for anybody who's interested in good history, economics, and just really wants to learn about liberty. I definitely suggest it. Check it out. It's a great resource. You guys are free to call in to Decline to State at Skype user Decline to State. That is Decline T-O State, one word. We would love to have you guys on the show. And you can also, you know, check us out at declinefm.com/live. And of course, if you want to put anything on the show that you want to hear, go ahead and submit articles to www.reddit.com/r/declinetostate. All right, guys, that was absolutely fantastic. I really felt like he gave us a whole bunch of interesting information there, and I just really loved having him on.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to see someone so professional just can keep it going, and it felt really natural. I could pick his brain probably for another hour.
Yeah. So, you know, we're going to move on here. I wanted to talk about an article, or rather talk about a post that was made on Reddit, and this is very interesting stuff. The post was to Ask Reddit, which is, if you guys aren't familiar with it, if the listeners aren't familiar, is a particular forum where you can give your questions to the, you know, to the crowd at Reddit and get them get a variety of responses, some serious, some not, back. And this is a very, very serious topic, and I wanted to talk about it in detail because I think it has a huge impact, you know, on many people's lives, and I think it's something we can say a good bit about. The topic is, you know, it's about helicopter moms, and the original post was, "I just saw a mother walk into a classroom with a handheld radiation meter and proceed to tell the teacher that little Billy," which I guess is her son's name, "needs to sit in the back corner of the classroom because of the toxic school Wi-Fi radiation. What other batshit things have you seen / heard of that these helicopter moms do?" So, you know, people were responding with all these horror stories of parents, and, you know, it obviously he was talking about helicopter moms, bleh. And, you know, there's helicopter dads too, but I do think that, you know, moms might be a little worse because they're not, tend to not work as much, I don't know. But certainly some of these stories are absolutely horrific. A lot of them, I would qualify them as child abuse. I don't know if you guys would agree with me on that.
And certainly in some cases, on some of the posts I've seen, yeah, it would certainly be child abuse. Not looking at anything in particular, but I mean, the first post on there, in fifth grade, a girl in my class had a really bad helicopter mom. One day the girl's mom stayed a few minutes in the class because she was angry at the teacher. Suddenly, her hydraulic pump fails, and she loses pressure in the foot pedals. Then she starts tilting to the left / backwards. Her rotors broke off and injured 12 kids, including her daughter and myself, and killed 3. Fucking helicopter moms.
Why isn't the FCC, not the FCC, who is in charge of the airplanes?
FAA.
The FAA, that's right. They should be monitoring that.
Who's in charge?
Helicopter mom. Gotta get the FAA on those helicopter moms. Now, in all seriousness, no. Here's another post that was made, and this is a story that I think was absolutely disturbing. It's really quick. You know, I saw a kid, must have been 12 or 13, yelling at his mom in public about how he can wipe his own ass and didn't need her help with that anymore. Her response, but you can't see it. How do you know it's really clean? This is so bad. I mean, this kind of stuff is like, you know, status logic squared here. I mean, that's awful. And I feel so bad for these kids.
She could work for the TSA.
Yeah.
That's how we grow status, right?
Well, it really is, because, I mean, when you apply this kind of overprotection to kids, when you micromanage their lives, do you think they can go out and be independent individuals? Do you think they can think for themselves properly? I mean, how do people get – I mean, some people obviously do. It's not like a set-in-stone thing, but it's Stefan Molyneux likes to say, like, when you have bad parents in a bad household and your childhood sucks, you think you're going to turn out okay? No, probably not. It's really good way to get really messed up people, including kids who are so screwed up that they go and, you know, shoot up a university or something, or, you know, a movie theater, as we saw recently. I mean, that obviously helicopter moms may not be the reason, but child abuse in general can lead to some pretty horrific people. And I would like to put forth an argument that I heard Stefan Molyneux make himself very recently in a video, which is that, you know, parenting is all our responsibility. It's our business, what, you know, people do with their kids, and it's our right to get involved, because these kids are going to go out into the world, and if they're parented badly, if they're treated badly, then, you know, they're going to be released as adults who are, you know, not completely functional. They're going to be not capable of interacting peacefully in society, potentially, and they could be a threat to us. So we really want to start at childhood in making voluntarists, as I would say.
Yeah, I think this has a lot to do with just society, how it babies kids until they're adults, even after they're adults, until they're in their mid-20s. They treat everyone like they're 6 years old, including the government. You know, the government has to provide, you know, services if we can't do it, or, you know, has to pay for our school and has to pay for our health care. And they don't really want to treat us like full-grown adults. They feel like they need to help us out constantly. And that mindset kind of perpetuates itself, and then you have these helicopter moms that do it their entire lives, and then when they become adults, they're just man-childs, you know? Okay.
Yeah, I definitely agree childs, with that. You know? I mean, Quashu, I mean, do you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was raised with an overprotective mother, you know, and I probably had, like, criticism from the other kids, as I can remember, you know, but I didn't connect the two. You know, I saw like jealousy and criticism from the other kids, but, you know, since my mom told me I was special, I didn't connect the two things. You know, it wasn't until I was older that started showing some independence. You know, I had to tell my mom to back off, you know. But yeah, so I think there's definitely negative effect from that. But again, we you know, society is telling us, you know, oh, you got to be careful. Don't let the kids go out on their own. It's a dangerous world, you know. So, you know, it encourages that overprotectiveness. And then they get the overprotectiveness in the schools, too. You know, you got the police system, the drug, you know, the drug dogs, the metal detectors, you know, it's all a police state, you know. So they move from one set of dependency into another, you know. So how do we move kids to be more independent? I think homeschooling is a great choice, you know, but there's also the risk there of keeping the kids too close to the parents. You know, you've got to allow them to break out from that, you know, and I think I've seen good homeschooling parents that did that, but, you know, it's too easy to be even way overprotective as a homeschooling parent too. So, you know, it takes rational thought. It's relying on the experience of other people that have done it. And certainly not relying on the state to tell you, you know, how to do everything.
I can totally relate. And there's so many awkward situations based on the fact that you're in these forced relationships, and you were talking about an overprotective mother, right? That you kind of had to put the brakes on, because otherwise it creates all this social fallout or things you have to deal with people. Because you don't really have that much of a choice of who you're stuck in class with. You're in these environments where it's just I mean, as we all know, it's just geographical. It's somewhat arbitrary, not necessarily the most beneficial. I was going to take it, make like a kind of a contrarian point, but not just for the sake of being contrarian. But I was someone who went to public schools, and kind of better ones. So like in better areas, and what I had a teacher said that in the classes that were the, you know, the more advanced ones or with the better students that we were in, there was a lot more parent involvement. So he said that at the nights where you have, you know, parent teacher night, the lower classes, nobody was there. And the other ones, it was just full to the brim of people asking questions and inquisitive. And it seemed like, you know, my mom volunteered for like an elementary school, helped do gardening projects. There's a lot of, you know, addition or people, you know, contributing to kind of help artificially boost the public school, which without that involvement to a degree would probably be, you know, just as bad as your average inner city place where no one learns anything at all.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. And, you know, I really want to encourage our listeners, you know, please call in and share your stories. If you've personally experienced, or if you know people who have experienced, you know, very difficult childhoods, if you have any opinion on this, certainly, you know, call in. I want to hear, you know, what other people out there who have experienced, you know, whether it's helicopter moms or, you know, really controlling fathers or anything like that. And especially if you're someone who broke through the barrier and you've come to volunteerism anyway, you know, that's something I think is not the norm. I think that's the exception rather than the rule here. So I really want to hear about your story. And of course, if you call in, you're entered into our raffle for a copy of Everything Voluntary by Scholar Jay Collins. And, you know, it's a great book. You really should want it. So you should call in. Do it. Seriously, do it.
Right now, call in and move to New Hampshire at the same time.
Yeah, and you know, certainly we're open to any competing theories. So if you think that, you know, we're completely wrong and everything we're saying is bullshit, please, you know, call in and tell us why you think that is. I want to talk about this. Quash, I know you had an article you wanted to share as well.
Yeah, I found a really cool one, and it's kind of exciting, and in a way, in a slight way, there's a tie-in to our conversation with Ian earlier, and I think it points to the fact that more and more people are getting really frustrated with government. Now, they're certainly not all ready to run up to New Hampshire, but I'm picking up that there are people all over this country, maybe all over the world, who are getting frustrated. They want things to change, and they don't want to wait anymore. This article talks about the group 4chan. Those of you who are familiar with 4chan, I think anybody who's been on Reddit probably is familiar with 4chan.
Yeah, it's an anonymous. Came from 4chan before I came to Reddit, and I abandoned it after a fan found an R anarcho-capitalism. Because it served the same purpose, but better.
But better. It's far superior, sure. But, you know, it's one of the... I mean, 4chan is a huge... You know, it's like... It's one of the most trafficked websites on the internet. It's an anonymous message board. So there's a group of 4chaners. You know, certainly they're not a monolithic group. Anybody can say that this is a... You know, I'm doing this in the name of 4chan. But a group has said... We are taking back Detroit. They're calling it Project Detroit. They say, and here's their blurb. They say, we are a group of like-minded individuals who wish to make an impact on the community by revitalizing dilapidated or broken down property and retrofitting it with green energy solutions in order to create a self-sustaining oasis in the middle of the city. Overall, long-term goal, our aim is to found a small community in Detroit full of people who share the same aspirations. The goal is to create something that the neighborhood and the entire city of Detroit can be proud of. We'll accomplish this through a mix of sustainable farming, green energy retrofitting, and free market trading of goods and services. That doesn't sound like 4chan to me. It's their public relations blurb. You know, and I think what they're, you know, you dig down in the document, you can find this document on the anarcho-capitalism subreddit. Even better yet, go to the Declined Estate subreddit. It'll be easier to find. But they say, you know, they're starting to form to actually put some plans together. They're looking at properties in Detroit. And I can give some background on that. I grew up in Detroit. In the 1960s, Detroit had a population of close to 2 million people, and now it's around 700,000. There's lots of wide open spaces. There's entire blocks that are available. There's commercial buildings you can get for free if you'll agree to pay the taxes. I was digging around on the property sites. I found a 30-unit apartment building, which says it's ready to be occupied, currently vacant, $89,000 plus surrounding property. There's wild pheasants, raccoons, possums running around at night. You know, there's open fields. There's a case I heard about last week where two guys from suburban Detroit, Westland, were carjacked. They were shot and dumped in a field in the city of Detroit. In a field where there used to be houses, they didn't find the bodies for a week, and it was just somebody out there walking his dog. He said he smelled something, you know. So there's lots of open space. So this plan from 4chan is to basically they go into some detail. We pick out property or several adjacent properties, try to get tax breaks for our quote community revitalization project, establish gardens, use them to teach our neighbors, you know. Put a giant fence around it, bring our guns, they even say, and basically start a base where they can expand outward, teach people how to do trades, how to grow things, start trading, you know, maybe trading in bitcoins, starting an alternate economy. It's an interesting thing. And I'm not ready to move to Detroit there, but This is something that I would probably participate in to some degree, at least helping out. I'm already in Detroit on a monthly basis, as part of an outreach program. And I think I would contribute to anything positive that's going to get the city moving, because you look at the politics and, you know, they had an emergency financial manager who's involved now and that was tied up in the courts, and now so they've had to go back on the agreement. Nothing moves forward in the city. It's all like moving in circles. So this is a pretty cool thing. So anybody, you know, who has an interest, I'd say, you know, look at it for the sake of your own community and try to see, you know, maybe it won't succeed. You can at least watch it and see where it went wrong. You know, so it's an interesting thing. And if I'm able to connect with these people at all, and actually see what's going on, I'm glad to keep the audience updated on it. You guys have any thoughts about, you know, is there a connection to your communities there in the sense of, you know, do you see people who are starting community gardens, things that are basically, you know, outside of the norm of what's permissible within the city, but people are getting frustrated with the economic situation and they want to see change. You know, it's a grassroots kind of thing.
You know, the thing is, I'm around the D.C. area, and there is a community. It's a community of thieves that like to steal from the rest of the country.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to get involved with it. I don't want to be part of that club.
Yeah, it used to be, historically or for a long time, Silicon Valley, Santa Clara County has been known to be the richest in, I guess, on average or whatever it is in the States. But now it's you guys, and it's, I can put one and one together, I think, in that regard. So basically, I'm saying, Eternal, that you're stealing from me personally, and I know about it.
Yeah, but you're stealing from me, jerk. Yeah, it's like the Bossiot quote. You know, government is that great fiction by which everyone lives at the expense of everyone else. I love that quote. It's so accurate.
Now, Eternal, I've never been to the D.C. area myself, but, I've heard there's some, like, pretty run-down, lousy parts of it, especially, you know, like around the outskirts. What does it look like and what's going on there? How are what's the unemployment level among the non-politicos there?
Well, it's still pretty good. You have the thing is, like, the way the D.C. area works is you have D.C. and the federal government in Northern Virginia and the Maryland, the metropolitan area, and all these buildings and all this government stuff, contractors, a lot of defense community stuff, And you know, the money flows outward and spills from the top down. So there is that like spillover effect, which is, you know, when you have a bunch of jobs for the government, well, the money that comes from the government spills out into, you know, retail and housing and other things that other people need. So yeah, definitely, you know, you need to, you know, go into a few areas specifically to see the rundown sections. I would say one place you can go is like some sections of Alexandria along Route 1. I'm being really specific here. You know, if you ever come down to the area, you'll be able to see this for yourself if you really want to. I wouldn't do it, but Alexandria around Route 1, there's some areas, you know, around Bailey's Crossroads and some other stuff. Some specific sections of Northern Virginia and Maryland are pretty crappy, and DC itself has like really nice sections and really crappy sections. So it's very strange. It's one of the weirdest areas because some parts are so lush, and you have like the houses that the Redskins players live in and stuff. You know, you got mansions, and then, you know, 10 miles down the road, you have trailer parks. So, you know, it doesn't seem like, you know, money flows out kind of uniformly. It's definitely one of those things we have, you know, the 1% and the 99% kind of thing. So I can see why people are pissed off, because they can look out their back door and see a mansion and they're living in, you know, squalor. They got nothing. And they're, yeah, you know, how do I get from here to there? And they don't see a way. There's no ladder. There's no path. It's just complete darkness, you know. They don't see any different way to get there.
Detroit is at 99.99%. You know, I mean, you don't see much affluence within the city at all. And I think something like this could get away with building, you know, a sub-community for quite a while before they get noticed by the authorities or anybody that would really care, other than somebody who's, like, trying to, like, steal their siding off their building or something. You know, so it's they could get away with it, unlike, you know, they probably couldn't do that in D.C., of course, or probably a lot of big cities. But I think a lot of things could go unnoticed in Detroit for quite a while before somebody catches on to them. What do you think, Zahn?
Well, I was just wondering what the end goal was for this project. Is it like a Free State Project-style movement where they want to ultimately secede or, you know, influence the government to reduce taxes and reduce influence? Or do they just want to make it like a slash Paul, like in slash K Haven for like gun lovers and things like that? Like, I really don't know where they're trying to go with this.
Well, and it's not real clear to me. I mean, I think it a lot of it sounds like just, hey, let's have a place where we can all hang out together and, I don't know, share tentacle porn or something. I don't know, but it's not real clear. But it, you know, they said take it back, take it over. Kind of like they're frustrated with government and they want society itself to change, and they're looking at this as a starting point within the bounds of the country, and where they're not going to be noticed, and that they could have a noticeable impact themselves.
Yeah, like I noticed a big meme on both Kay and Paul are like racial tension in the race war, that like helter skelter type thing that a lot of them actually want to happen. And with it being centered in Detroit, that seems almost like they're making their own wishes come true, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's definitely the setting of a post-apocalypse. You know, it's like Escape from New York kind of disaster area. So, there's almost nothing you could do that would make it any worse. So if they're bringing any kind of money or resources or goods into the city, it's going to have some kind of positive effect, I think. So, like I said, I would support it to a degree. I'm kind of concerned about getting caught up with the name 4chan. You know, there's a bad reputation. You know, you don't want to get caught up with, make yourself too noticeable to the feds. But maybe there's ways to anonymously support what they're doing on, what they're trying to do. What do you think, Ron?
I was curious how this kind of evolves, because it strikes me, you being someone from Michigan who has been into Detroit, you don't live there right now, right? But you're going in.
I got out when I could. Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah. I just think it's curious how these places don't get used. It's kind of artificial in terms of how things get zoned, and they just get left to decay.
Yeah, nobody wants it. I mean, people started moving out in the late 60s. There were a couple of riots, and the National Guard was brought in. And basically, it was white flight. The businesses moved out soon after that, and the white population moved out. So there was a drastically declining property value. You know, and over the last 15 years or so, the middle-class black neighborhood started moving out to the cities, mainly because of the school system and the taxes, too. So what's left is like a 50% unemployed or dependent on the state, you know, population. If it weren't for the drug trade, things would be disastrous. I don't think there'd be anything left at all. But, you know, and that's also a possibility of getting people on the side of freedom, because there is a drug trade that meets a need to the surrounding community, and it's a legitimate. So I think there's people who would be wanting to legalize that, to acknowledge that, you know, this is what people want. Why keep throwing people in jail?
Definitely. You know, throwing people in jail is never the right answer. You know, it doesn't work, you know, when you're trying to deal with, you know, social problems. And, you know, certainly, you know, we can talk about this some more after the break. We got a break coming up here. And to all your listeners, this is Decline to State. You can call in at Skype user Decline to State. That's Decline to State. Please call in. We would love to hear your opinions on all these topics. You know, should 4chan take over Detroit? Let's hear your answer. This is Decline to State. We'll be right back.
Introduction. The real and the unreal. When you look at the natural world, don't you think how beautiful it is? All the bounties of nature, vision, sound, and symmetry laid before us like an immeasurable feast for the senses. So much of our world is beautiful too. Art, architecture, technology, toys, food, these all delight the mind, the soul, and the senses. But above this beauty, we all know it, we can see it, threatening to eclipse and extinguish it, is a growing darkness that we cannot contain. War, debt, imprisonment, violence, abuse, corruption, these all stain our world, often increasing, seemingly without end. Our world, the world of the West, of freedom and philosophy, trade and democracy, is hanging by a thread. Greece burns. Riots escalate. Birth rates plummet. The youth flee. Currencies dissolve. Economies collapse. Unemployment swells. Prisons expand. Families crack and break apart. The deaths of the dead strangle the unborn. Come on. We all want to fix what is broken, but you must have noticed that every solution we try just seems to make things worse. We try to solve the problem of poverty and create a permanent underclass. We created institutions to achieve economic stability, but still suffer through endless booms and busts. We tried to get rid of drugs and drug use expanded. We wanted to give kids a good education and end up with record dropout rates, illiteracy, and the forced drugging of children. We try to help people save for their old age, only to hand them empty IOUs that enslave their children. What keeps going so terribly wrong? Well, when every problem we try to solve gets worse, everything we think we know must be re-examined.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Decline to State. That, of course, is the, or maybe not of course, it's actually kind of new, the new trailer for this Stephon Molyneux documentary, which looks interesting, and it may encourage me to finally get off my butt and donate him some money, because I've heard him talk about how the the listener to donator ratio is quite low, and I'm sure I could throw him a few bones for Liberty.
Definitely, and that's something I need to do too. I feel bad because, being a poor student for so long, I really wanted to donate to him. Now that I have a little bit of money, I haven't done it yet, so I really need to get around to doing that and donating to them. A bunch of other places that have done a lot for me over the years, like the Mises Institute as well. And I would love to hear from all the listeners, call in, tell us, who you think that we should give our money to. Who do you think has really improved your understanding of liberty? Who's made significant changes in how you view things, how helped you along the path? And, who do we really need to get behind as being a great resource to share with other people to bring them on board? And you can do that by calling into Decline to State, Skype user Decline to State, T-O State. And you can also ask questions in the IRC, which you can find at declinefm.com/live. And you can log into the IRC there and talk with some of the other hosts in the show as well. And additionally, you can always post up content you want to see talked about on the show. Just go to www.reddit.com/r/declinetostate.
And I would like to remind you all that Decline to State is still brought to you free of charge, as well as commercial free. A big thanks to all of our hosts, tech experts, researchers, contributors, our listeners, and Ian Freeman for today. Decline to State is a group effort motivated by our love of liberty, as well as capitalist bow ties and free market monocles. And remember, when asked, always decline to state and move to New Hampshire immediately. This is Ron McPaul saying have a great night.
Wait, we are actually not done.
Oh, we have a whole other half hour to go? I'm really sorry, guys.
Ron, you're getting all excited over there. You're faking all the listeners. You're going to leave.
I'm sorry about that. No, your reminder is so exciting. My face is red, as you'll imagine. My bad. Yeah, we have a few more topics to do.
Yeah,
usually
we run only 3 segments, so we run about an hour and a half. But because we had Ian on, and he had so much to say, and it was so great talking to him, we're running for 4 segments this show. So
yeah,
I can understand the confusion.
The time really flew by. I'm not gonna lie. This cast, normally, we kind of have set times, and you can just kind of feel when we're wrapping up. But this one, it's hard to keep track of time. I guess it's been fun. So my apologies, guys. I don't take back all the thanks, and I don't take back the move to New Hampshire. You're still supposed to do that, but also call in, as Eternal says.
All right. So yeah, we had another article we wanted to talk about, which is regarding the Silk Road. If you guys don't know what the Silk Road is, it's a website where people can buy certain substances. And Zom is going to talk a little bit more about that. Rudd, you had something to say really quick. So what's going on? No, that's okay. Zom, yeah, so you want to talk about the Silk Road?
Yeah, the Silk Road is an online marketplace that is only accessible...
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Brodo.
I wanted to say that Decline to State is a group effort, and
troll. This is why we kick him on a call screening duty.
Was that what you really wanted to say? Did you have anything to say, Rhoda, or is that a little joke?
I think everyone should outro the show at least once this episode.
Yeah, that's
all right. Decline to State is a group effort brought to you by... Okay, Rhoda, go ahead.
Okay.
Okay, that was it. All right. Okay, back to the Silk Road. The Silk Road is an online marketplace that is only accessible through the Tor browser, which is an encrypted browser that piggybacks off of Firefox. And it is an online marketplace that uses bitcoins as their currency to buy really anything you want. They do have electronic equipment, digital services, but mostly drugs. Pretty much 99% drugs. And you can really get anything you want shipped to your house internationally. And there was a study done recently, over the past few months, by Cornell University, which showed that their current monthly market cap is about 1.9 million, which is pretty interesting, which corresponds to about $143,000 in commissions for Silk Road itself.
I mean, I've never used Silk Road. I don't use any illicit substances. The only things I use, I guess, are alcohol and caffeine. So, yeah, I have no experience with the Silk Road, but I'm all for people, you know, being able to voluntarily exchange goods and services, even if those goods and services are things I would not use because of health reasons. And certainly, you know, it tells me that the government has completely failed in their war on drugs. They have failed completely. It's absurd that something like this could exist at all, and the government talking about, you know, anything remotely close to success. So, you know, even if you agree that we should restrict drugs, even if you agree that drugs should be illegal, even if you think that using violence against peaceful people is the correct solution to what amounts to a medical problem, which is drug addiction, if you think that this is the way things should work, you're still not going to get it done. I mean, you're not going to solve the problem that way. Empirically, it can't work. I'm sorry. We've tried it. It doesn't work.
I really think this doesn't speak to the failure of the war on drugs as more to the success of the Tor browser and to cryptocurrencies and encryption in general.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's true, too. I also want to relay something. This is a bit non sequitur, but the chat's telling me that Erwin Schiff is having serious health problems, which is some really bad news. If you guys don't know who Erwin Schiff is, he is Peter Schiff, who is a prominent Liberty Movement guy and hosts his own radio show at schiffradio.com. His father is in jail, and he's been in jail for quite a while, not allowed to make appeals. I mean, the whole case is insane. You can look it up. And, you know, he's like 80-some years old or something, and he, I guess he's not doing too good, so we'll have to take a look at that. You know, maybe next week and see. Hopefully things will improve, but I know, you know, how well can an 80-year-old do when kept in a cage? I mean, that's not good for him.
That's really sad. I remember hearing about the whole story and how he was going around. He published a book. He was doing seminars that were saying, you don't really owe taxes because, you know, it's voluntary, and there's these you know, obscure court rulings that say you really don't have to pay and they can't do anything against you. And of course they went after him and convicted him. I don't know what the federal charges were, and he tried to take it to a jury trial, and he ended up with a huge sentence. You know, his own tax evasion and whatever else they could trump up and get him for. And it's all pretty sad, you know. So and I think part of the motivation for his son, Peter Schiff, in getting involved in making his case more public in running for Senate, it's been to try to help his dad out and show him that, you know, what you've done has not been in vain. You know, it's kind of sad to hear that he's not doing well. And
I was going to say, you know, as we got a throwaway matey singing in the chat, and Rudder was saying here too, you know, when you try to fight the state over its own laws, when the state is the interpreter of those laws, you think it's going to go well. I mean, it doesn't care about its own rules. You're banking on the fact that the person sitting behind the bench over there is someone who cares more about principle and the applications of logic rather than his job. So, you know, you think that's really going to happen? I don't think so. I think everyone learned that the hard way, and unfortunately, and we can all take, some knowledge from that. We can learn our lesson vicariously through his actions and know that maybe the path to liberty does not involve a courtroom.
Yeah, and you know, and it scares me when I hear Ian frankly talk about, you know, not paying taxes. I'm like, you know, at some point he's going to say the wrong thing, and he's going to piss off somebody in the government, and they're going to say, you know, it's the same way they got Al Capone, you know? they're going to use the tax office to go after him. And, you know, because it's a civil court, it's a different rules, you know, that you don't need, you know, a total overwhelming evidence to convict somebody in the tax courts, you know. So it's a scary thing that they could pull you off the street on what is essentially a side issue, you know. So, but the positive thing is, you know, a thing like Bitcoins and the Silk Road are an economic alternative that we can bypass that system entirely, you know, as long as we can, you know, keep things under the radar. You know, if people are engaging in commerce outside of the system, it gets really hard for them to track it, you know. So if we can keep it quiet until it's so big that they couldn't possibly stop it, I think that's a positive thing. Looking at this study, I see that, you know, I'm looking at the actual study here, and it says they reviewed 24,422 items that were traded. I don't know how they had access to this data. I think they were connected with the owners of Silk Road somehow to get anonymous data. And out of all these items, it says it's kind of interesting. It says that 13.7 of them were transactions for weed. 9% were drugs in general. I don't know what that means. 7.3% were prescription drugs. 4.9% were benzos. 3.9 are, you know, the first non-drug things. It says books. And I'm wondering what books those were. I guess I'll have to go look on Silk Road and see what kind of books
they sell.
Yeah, probably how to make
they
drugs.
They sell ebooks, quite a few different ones, a couple hundred of varying topics. Well, there's a lot of different things on how to get things for free, scam people, and I don't. There's just a lot of different topics, none of which I'm really interested in personally.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah. It's information though. Yeah.
Yeah, most of the items, you know, after that, cannabis, hash, cocaine, pills, blotter, you know, money is listed on there. That's at 1.7%, and then down more drugs until it gets to the last item, digital goods, 1.1%. So, yeah, probably about 99% or close to it. Yeah, let me add these up here. Yeah, probably about 95% drugs, and the other things are probably drug-related.
Where are you getting this data from? I'm just
this
wondering.
Is from the study that was linked in the article.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, definitely. A big part of the reason why the Silk Road is able to do any of this stuff at all is the cryptocurrency. And we wanted to talk a bit about Bitcoin and some interesting developments with Bitcoin, too. I wanted to talk a bit about this thing called the Global Bitcoin Stock Exchange, which was news to me when it was posted up and declined to stay by one of our listeners. And, of course, you know, all you guys out there listening, post up articles in the Decline to State subreddit, please. You know, we'd love to hear your ideas and stuff, and you can come up with great things like this. I checked it out today. The Global Bitcoin Stock Exchange is located, I think it's like www.glbse.org or com. I'll also get the URL in a bit and make sure I got the. But the idea is, you know, it's just like a normal stock exchange. You could go ahead and take your Bitcoins, and you can buy shares and different things. You can the majority of the things I saw on there, the vast majority were Bitcoin mining companies. So people that had computers that could mine for Bitcoins, and you could pay to get more hardware for them. You basically invest your money into more hardware for them, and they would pay a dividend out based upon, you know, whatever their hardware is producing. So you would slowly make your money back is the idea.
Well, it's fascinating. I'm going to have to look through these list of, you know, items that are listed on the exchange. I had seen some other like ETFs. They were investment funds basically in other commodities or other real stocks. Some look like some startup companies. And so basically it looks like they just said, okay, I'm here to start a business. Here are my shares and open them up on the market. So then you can buy in with Bitcoins and trade them. There was somebody on a thread on Reddit that was saying that he was making 1%
a week.
Yeah.
That's insane.
You know, trading these, and that's going to happen as it becomes more volatile. People will be just trading these back and forth, and the companies are going to have huge swings in volume. And eventually, the SEC is going to hear about this. You know, and this is. Even though it's in Bitcoins, and even though they say it's you know, it doesn't need to be regulated, that's not what going to be the SEC is going to say, you know. And so I hope that whoever's running this is well protected, because they're definitely going to be trying to shut this down. They don't like competition to their whole system. You know, imagine if anybody could start a business, get money for it, you know, and then share in the profits to the investors outside of the system. They're going to hate that.
Yeah, well, definitely, you know, it could be a bit of a target, but I don't know how much you're going to do about it. I mean, I guess you could go after the web servers or something, but, you know, that's you know, it's really going to be hard to deal with this because, you know, the government can't break these cryptocurrencies. I mean, they're really good. I'm pretty convinced in the math behind it. And certainly one thing that I really loved when I went to the Bitcoin Stock Exchange, and just so the listeners know, the URL is glbse.com. I don't think there's a www in front of it, just glbse.com. And, you know, there's an entire tab that's IPOs. I mean, so if you have a good idea and you want to take money in the form of Bitcoins, which I would rather have Bitcoins than dollars, because, you know, certainly they're going to hold their value better and probably, you know, appreciate in value like they have been for the past few weeks. I would rather have that than paper money. And you can take that money and you can go ahead and do whatever you want with it if it's a good business idea. And certainly, you know, if it's something like you want to go out and buy a 3D printer and produce some sort of product, I don't know, you want to produce like little miniature figurines that you think people would like and you could sell those, you know, maybe raise a couple of $1,000 for a decent 3D printer on and sell them, you know, on whatever site you want. I don't know if Silk Road is a good place to sell that kind of stuff, but, you know, you can definitely utilize this as a real fundraising source, and it's anonymous. So if you want to do something under the radar of regulators, if you want to collect money and pay out profits and stuff, if you want to do this without taxation being in the way, if you want to do this without state regulations being in the way, this is probably the best way to do it, as opposed to using cash where you have to report things.
It would be great to not have to pay taxes on the money you make. Because for me, that's just really discouraging for trying to put money in the market. I know, Eternal, that you're interested in investing in the market, you know, with stocks and trends and data analysis we talked about in the previous past, but I'm curious how comfortable you would be with, I guess, one, the risk you might be taking. I could see this being a lot more volatile potentially because it's so untried. And two, what do you think? Like, how do you think things will turn out in terms of, like, accounting practices and stuff like that? Like, will it kind of be a mirror image at first of what we already have, the current financial system minus the taxes, or will we have, you know, will it involve something totally different?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, what do you, Zal and Quash, what do you guys think about all this?
Well, I fear that, you know, yeah, there's definitely going to be scammers there. We've seen scammers in the Bitcoin community where they've set up, you know, exchanges or phony, you know, bank systems that was basically scamming the people who were putting the money in. So there's definitely going to be scammers there. Now, that could be handled by the free market, but it'll be an excuse for the Feds to come in and say, well, this is why this is so dangerous and, you know, somebody set up a Ponzi scheme and all these investors lost money. So we need to protect the public from this and we're going to shut it down, you know. So that's the scary thing, is that eventually it's going to be noticed, you know. And again, unless it reaches a breaking point where there's so many people using it that they couldn't possibly shut it down, there's nothing they can do. And there is a chance for that. I mean, they're barely aware of Bitcoins as it is. You know, so I think they'd be clueless about, you know, a stock exchange being out there. So there's a chance it could really grow. What was the amount that it was? $1.9 million per – anybody know what that was? What was the amount, the volume traded? Oh, $1.9 million per month is being traded apparently on Silk Road. You know, I don't know how much is going through the stock exchange. But again, if it can grow to a point where – it's above a tipping point, they really won't be able to stop it.
Oh, yeah. I have a little bit to add about the scams being on Bitcoin. There is a well-known Ponzi scheme on some of the Bitcoin forums. He's well-known. His name is Pirate40 or something around there. And he's known to control about 30% of the total Bitcoins that are out there, which is over $2.5 million, which is a little scary if you think about it. And yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on a few weeks ago where Bitcoin went from about $7 to almost $10 in one day. And some logs from an IRC chat got released where Pirate was basically saying, I'm just fucking with everybody. Look how much money I'm going to make by manipulating the market. He said he made about $20,000 in about 2 hours by manipulating the market up and down and just basically capitalizing on people being scared and just buying really fast.
Yeah, so, a little pump and dump kind of thing?
Yeah, well, it was a little bit of a back and forth. When you own 30% of a currency, you can do stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, my guess would be, and I'm not an expert in the market, and I know that even the experts don't outperform the market, is that it's just going to be more volatile, higher risk, which means both the chance of higher upside stuff and higher downside stuff. You know, like Quash was talking about, you could have the market make a lot of money because you're not having taxes, but also it could go all the way under if they figured out how to crack it or if it was rated. Not that they could figure it out, but you know, there's always that risk, right? Markets go on perception, not always truth. I don't know. I'm just interested in it.
Oh, and some of you might be wondering how it's known that Pirate 40 is in fact a Ponzi scheme. Well, everyone, Bitcoin is really trackable. You can look at the momentum of Bitcoin and where it sits in accounts. And the majority of his Bitcoins are in fact sitting still and not being invested, while he is at the same time offering 3% a week returns, which I don't know if you guys know anything about the financial system. 3% a week is insane returns on basically depositing in a bank. And so a lot of people are really skeptical on whether they'll ever get their money back. And considering the money is just sitting there not being invested currently, it's kind of just sitting there, and then he manipulates the market and makes quite a bit of money.
Well, and remember, when you say that it's trackable, you mean that it's trackable to the wallets. You can look at the numbers. You can't track it to a physical person unless you somehow can map the wallet to the person.
Yeah.
You could do if you made an exchange with somebody and you knew exactly who they were in real life. Like, if you could figure out, like, you know, their address and their name and stuff. If you knew who they were and you knew what wallet they would give you, you could map that wallet to them, perhaps. But you know, it is an anonymous system. It's trackable in the sense that you could track where the Bitcoins go through the wallets, but not people themselves.
What about people that have like a link to their address on the web, say our site, or somebody wanted to have donations and they put their Bitcoin address? Would that say loud and clear, like, this is who I am? Someone could do a big internet search and...
Oh, kind of. You can only track Bitcoins that get sent to the account, and it's all trackable on blockchain.info, but where you send your money from there isn't really trackable, only when you receive the Bitcoins.
Interesting.
So yeah, if you're donating to something in Bitcoins, you're fine. You can even put down your personal info. It won't be trackable. The only people that might know, I guess, are the people you're trading to. I don't know about that. I guess it depends on how they set it. But, you know, if you're giving your info to them, they'd have your info anyways. Don't worry about third parties getting a hold of it unless there's a database crack or something, which is always a risk when you put personal info online. Credit cards have that happen all the time.
Yeah.
And we're kind of running out of time here. We got, you know, 2 minutes left. So, you know, I just wanted to say that you know, Bitcoins are definitely something to keep an eye on. And I think we'll probably talk about them ad nauseum on this show, because it's a really interesting topic, both from a technical standpoint and from a liberty standpoint and a financial standpoint. So you know, definitely a lot to talk about. Ron, did you want to take us out for real
this time? You notice I'm hesitant this time because you know.
Fake. No, it's actually 11:58. You can do.
So it's okay. Double checking.
Yeah, you're.
Sorry for the confusion, guys. This is Ronald McPaul watching the sun. Well, I guess it's already set now over the Silicon Valley. We want to welcome you to check out the archives to track our progress as we continue to spread the message of liberty on Decline FM or Decline to State on iTunes. Remember, if there's a topic you want to hear discussed on the show, please submit to r/declinetostate@reddit.com and get user Decline to State saved on Skype so you're ready to call in. We keep continuing to working on design and content for the website, so look forward to it. And as Eternal mentioned, we have a book raffle for our attractive and principled callers. Several copies of the book, Everything Voluntary, will be given out. And again, I would like to remind you that Decline to State is still brought to you free of charge as well as commercial free. A big thanks to all of our hosts, tech experts, researchers, contributors, our listeners, and Ian. Thank you, sir. Decline to State is a group effort motivated by our love of liberty as well as capitalist bow ties and free market monocles. Remember, when asked, always decline to state.
All right. Sounds great. So, yeah, everybody, this has been Eternal, and I really hope you guys enjoyed the show. Big thanks to Ian Freeman for coming on, and take care.
This has been Quash Yorkor. I'm going to be stockpiling ammunition so I can take back Detroit.
And this is Zom, and I once again like to thank Ian Freeman for coming on. And listen next week or on Sunday. This is Decline to State.
All right. Good night, everyone.